The book was written by Dr. Floyd Ferris and published by the State Science Institute. "I had nothing to do with it," said Dr. Robert Stadler. He stood still by the side of his desk with the uncomfortable feeling of having missed some beat of time, of not knowing how long the preceding moment had lasted. He had pronounced the words aloud, in a tone of rancorous sarcasm directed at whoever had made him say it. He shrugged, resting on the belief that self-mockery is an act of virtue. The shrug was the emotional equivalent of the sentence, "You're Robert Stadler. Don't act like a high school neurotic." He sat down at his desk and pushed the book aside with the back of his hand. Dr. Floyd Ferris arrived half an hour late. "Sorry," he said, "but my car broke down again on the way from Washington, and I had a hell of a time trying to find somebody to fix it. There's getting to be so damn few cars out on the road that half the service stations are closed." There was more annoyance than apology in his voice. He sat down without waiting for an invitation to do so. Dr. Floyd Ferris would not have been noticed as particularly handsome in any other profession, but in the one he had chosen he was always described as that good-looking scientist. He was 6 feet tall and 45 years old, but he managed to look taller and younger. He had an air of immaculate grooming and a ballroom grace of motion, but his clothes were severe, his suits being usually black or midnight blue. He had a finely traced mustache, and his smooth black hair made the Institute boys say that he used the same shoe polish on both ends of him. He did not mind repeating, in the tone of a joke on himself, that a movie producer once said he would cast him for the part of a titled European gigolo. He had begun his career as a biologist, but that was forgotten long ago. He was famous as the top coordinator of the State Science Institute. Dr. Stadler glanced at him with astonishment. The lack of apology was unprecedented, and said dryly, "It seems to me that you were spending a great deal of your time in Washington." "But, Dr. Stadler, wasn't it you who once paid me the compliment of calling me the watchdog of this institute?" said Dr. Ferris pleasantly. "Isn't that my most essential duty?" "A few of your duties seem to be accumulating right around this place. Before I forget it, would you mind telling me what's going on here about that oil shortage mess?" He could not understand why Dr. Ferris's face tightened into an injured look. "You will permit me to say that this is unexpected and unwarranted," said Dr. Ferris in that tone of formality which conceals pain and reveals martyrdom. "None of the authorities involved have found cause for criticism. We have just submitted a detailed report on the progress of the work to date to the Bureau of Economic Planning and Natural Resources, and Mr. Wesley Mooch has expressed himself as satisfied. We have done our best on that project. We have heard no one else describe it as a mess. Considering the difficulties of the terrain, the hazards of the fire, and the fact that it has been only 6 months since we—" "What are you talking about?" asked Dr. Stadler. "The Wyatt Reclamation Project. Isn't that what you asked me?" "No," said Dr. Stadler. "No, I—" "Wait a moment. Let me get this straight. I seem to recall something about this institute taking charge of a reclamation project. What is it that you're reclaiming?"
"Oil," said Dr. Ferris. "The Wyatt oil fields."
"That was a fire, wasn't it? In Colorado?" "That was..." "Wait a moment. That was the man who set fire to his own oil wells."
"I'm inclined to believe that that's a rumor created by public hysteria," said Dr. Ferris dryly. "A rumor with some undesirable, unpatriotic implications. I wouldn't put too much faith in those newspaper stories. Personally, I believe that it was an accident, and that Ellis Wyatt perished in the fire."
"Well, who owns those fields now?"
"Nobody. At the moment, there being no will or heirs, the government has taken charge of operating the fields as a measure of public necessity for 7 years. If Ellis Wyatt does not return within that time, he will be considered officially dead."
"Well, why did they come to you, to us, for such an unlikely assignment as oil pumping?"
"Because it is a problem of great technological difficulty, requiring the services of the best scientific talent available. You see, it is a matter of reconstructing the special method of oil extraction that Wyatt had employed. His equipment is still there, though in a dreadful condition. Some of his processes are known, but somehow there is no full record of the complete operation or the basic principle involved. That is what we have to rediscover. And how is it going? The progress is most gratifying. We have just been granted a new and larger appropriation. Mr. Wesley Mooch is pleased with our work. So are Mr. Balch of the Emergency Commission, Mr. Anderson of Crucial Supplies, and Mr. Pettibone of Consumers Protection. I do not see what more could be expected of us. The project is fully successful. Have you produced any oil? No, but we have succeeded in forcing a flow from one of the wells to the extent of 6.5 gallons. This, of course, is merely of experimental significance, but you must take into consideration the fact that we had to spend 3 full months just to put out the fire, which has now been totally, almost totally extinguished. We have a much tougher problem than Wyatt ever had, because he started from scratch, while we have to deal with the disfigured wreckage of an act of vicious antisocial sabotage, which, I mean to say, it is a difficult problem, but there is no doubt that we will be able to solve it. Well, what I really asked you about was the oil shortage here in the Institute. The level of temperature maintained in this building all winter was outrageous. They told me that they had to conserve oil. Surely you could have seen to it that the matter of keeping this place adequately supplied with such things as oil was handled more efficiently. Oh, is that what you had in mind, Dr. Stadler? Oh, but I am so sorry. The words came with a bright smile of relief on Dr. Ferris's face. His solicitous manner returned. Do you mean that the temperature was low enough to cause you discomfort? I mean that I nearly froze to death. But that is unforgivable. Why didn't they tell me? Please accept my personal apology, Dr. Stadler, and rest assured that you will never be inconvenienced again. The only excuse I can offer for our maintenance department is that the shortage of fuel was not due to their negligence. It was, oh, I realize that you would not know about it, and such matters should not take up your invaluable attention. But you see, the oil shortage last winter was a nationwide crisis. Why? For heaven's sake, don't tell me that those Wyatt fields were the only source of oil in the country. No, no. But the sudden disappearance of a major supply wrought havoc in the entire oil market, so the government had to assume control and impose oil rationing on the country in order to protect the essential enterprises. I did obtain an unusually large quota for the Institute, and only by the special favor of some very special connections. But I feel abjectly guilty if this proved insufficient. Rest assured that it will not happen again. It is only a temporary emergency. By next winter, we shall have the Wyatt fields back in production, and conditions will return to normal. Besides, as far as this Institute is concerned, I made all the arrangements to convert our furnaces to coal, and it was to be done next month. Only the Stockton Foundry in Colorado closed down suddenly without notice. They were casting parts for our furnaces. But Andrew Stockton retired quite unexpectedly, and now we have to wait till his nephew reopens the plant. I see. Well, I trust that you will take care of it among all your other activities. Dr. Stadler shrugged with annoyance. It is becoming a little ridiculous, the number of technological ventures that an institution of science has to handle for the government. But Dr. Stadler... I know, it can't be avoided. By the way, what is Project X? Dr. Ferris's eyes shot to him swiftly, an odd, bright glance of alertness that seemed startled but not frightened. Where did you hear about Project X, Dr. Stadler? Oh, I heard a couple of your younger boys saying something about it with an air of mystery you'd expect from amateur detectives. They told me it was something very secret. That's right, Dr. Stadler. It is an extremely secret research project which the government has entrusted to us, and it is of utmost importance that the newspapers get no word about it. What's the X? Xylophone. Project Xylophone. That is a code name, of course. The work has to do with sound. But I'm sure that it would not interest you. It is a purely technological undertaking. Yes, do spare me the story. I have no time for your technological undertakings. May I suggest that it would be advisable to refrain from mentioning the words Project X to anyone, Dr. Stadler? Oh, all right, all right. I must say I do not enjoy discussions of that kind. But of course, and I wouldn't forgive myself if I allowed your time to be taken up by such concerns. Please feel certain that you may safely leave it to me. He made a movement to rise. Now, if this was the reason you wanted to see me, please believe that I...
No, said Dr. Stadler slowly. This was not the reason I wanted to see you.
Dr. Ferris volunteered no questions, no eager offers of service. He remained seated, merely waiting. Dr. Stadler reached over and made the book slide from the corner to the center of his desk, with a contemptuous flick of one hand. "Will you tell me, please?" he asked. "What is this piece of indecency?"